Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Looking for Richard. Enjoy the episode.
Good morning, Jeff.
I got some shit I gotta say. We're on a tight schedule today, folks. We only have about 30 minutes to record this episode of Looking for Richard. Maybe 40 if we push it. But we cannot talk about Looking for Richard right away. I got some shit I gotta say.
Okay, say what you gotta say.
So this morning, I ran to Walgreens, beloved convenience / pharmaceutical superstore.
Buy something that I had to request.
Yeah, I had to buy you a Mountain Dew, and I also had to get myself an energy bar. That's besides the point.
We're doing this pretty early, folks.
The point being,
yeah,
go to the back of the Walgreens and you go to the drink section.
Yeah.
They have these fucking massive screens.
Yeah.
For the cooler.
Yeah.
And you can't see inside.
Right.
It's just a screen recreation of what is inside of the thing. It says,
yeah,
easy for you to discover.
I already know where you're going with this. Yeah.
And it says, or I'm trying to find an Alani energy drink for you. And I see it on the screen. I'm like, oh, cool. So I open the fucking thing.
It's empty.
It's empty.
Yeah.
You know what's easier to see than a screen?
A
fucking window.
Yeah.
That just lets you see the drinks inside.
You're speaking my language. You're
preaching
the
choir. How much money did they spend on these screens?
But do you know why those screens are actually the thing?
Why?
So did you notice at the top of the screens?
There's an ad.
There's like, no. At the very, very top, above the screen, on like the little scene, there's a camera.
Okay.
Those doors track your eye movements to try to see what you are looking at first.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides like data for these companies and Walgreens on like placement of drinks and stuff. It's like actually kind of like grotesque.
Mm-hmm. Evil.
It really is. Like there.
What happened to the window?
Well, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but like
everything's a screen now.
Like when I used to live in Andersonville, the Walgreens there also had like the TV doors, as I call them. And I always noticed that they had that little button cam at the top, and it looks like a camera. If you ever study it, it looks like a camera. And I'm like, what the fuck is that thing for? Like it, like, cause you notice like if you don't, if you're far away from the screen, it's an ad, right? But when you approach to it, it's like there's a motion sensor and it changes to the menu, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's because it's not the motion sensor. It's a camera. That could also be a motion sensor. But what it's doing is it's tracking your eye movement. And there was a TikTok, I want to say, I watched where somebody was talking about it. And he said, yeah, this is because they want to track your eye movement, see what thing that you are looking for first. Or whatever. It's just all like advertisement data. And, you know, I am, of course, as me, Stuart Elmore, never condoning any vandalism for any businesses whatsoever. But if you are worried there is a camera in your house, nail polish remover completely destroys the lens and you have to basically buy a new one. It's better than regular paint. It's better than anything else. Nail polish remover is great for destroying camera lenses.
Good stuff.
That's all I got to say about that. Do what you will with that information. So Jeff, we're trying to like backstock a few episodes here, and we both work pretty long, grueling hour jobs.
Yeah,
me especially.
Both of us.
Yeah, I work like so many long hours every day. You know, hardly can keep up watching some of these movies. But we decided, you know, this Sunday we got to do it. But I had plans. And so I said, okay, well, we have to be done by like a certain time.
Yeah.
And then you said, okay, well, we're going to do two episodes. I'm like, are you sure we can do two episodes? And you're like, yes, we can. I'm like, okay, well, one of them's The Crucible. And I don't know anything about Looking for Richard. He's like, Stuart, Looking for Richard will be a 30-minute, if even, episode. And you said it. And you said it on mic, too. The audience knows.
It's like,
Stuart,
I spent 5 minutes of it talking about Walgreens.
And you said, Stuart, do not look up this movie prior. I want you to be surprised by what this movie is about. Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, I would behoove you then to believe my excitement then going into Looking for Richard. That, by the way, the only way you can watch it. How did you watch this movie, Jeff?
I bought this for $12 on Apple TV.
I also bought this for $12.
Now I just own this for all time.
I own this on Apple.
Forever.
Forever. A movie that I'm never going to watch again.
You're probably going to watch it again. I think in 25 years, you're going to be a little sauced one night and you're going to pop open the Apple TV and be like, fuck. I'm throwing that on.
Looking for Richard. So, like, yeah, I find Looking for Richard. I buy it. And, like, because I have it open, I cannot help but read the initial logline synopsis. Yeah. And I am introduced to Al Pacino.
Oh, yeah.
Who wants to reintroduce Richard III.
Yes.
The Shakespeare play back into the lives of modern Americans.
Yes. So I actually have it pulled up. So in my Winona Ryder biography that I've been reading.
Oh, is there
Looking
a bit
for
on
Richard
this?
Has one page.
No shit.
It is a like.
I can't believe it has a page.
Let me see how this book is 267 pages long. This is one page in chapter 9. I could just honestly read the whole page.
Read the whole page.
Should I just read the whole page?
Read the whole page.
Okay. This is a excerpt from Winona Ryder biography series book 4 by Nigel Goodall. Her would-be scream father from The Godfather Part 3, Al Pacino, was beginning work on what he deemed a personal documentary about Shakespeare's most complicated work, Richard III. In Looking for Richard, Pacino wanted Winona to play Lady Anne. He knew only too well that Winona was one of the few actresses young enough for the part and one of the few with the ability to perform Shakespeare and understand the scene she would be playing. He also knew that she was perfect for the role. For Winona, the 2 weeks of filming proved to be everything she believed acting should be, informal, relaxed, and above all, entertaining. She would be appearing alongside her Beetlejuice and Great Balls of Fire co-star Alec Baldwin, who was to play Clarence. "We're getting $40 a day and all the donuts we can eat," laughed Baldwin. Kevin Spacey was recruited to play Buckingham, with Estelle Parsons as Margaret, Aidan Quinn as Richmond, and Harris Yulin as King Edward. Pacino's vision was certainly different. He described Looking for Richard as a combination of scenes from the play mixed with documentary footage about Shakespeare's all-pervading impact, a way in which everyone from Sir John Gielgud to kids in New York's Hell's Kitchen are affected by the bard's words. Long after Winona and all the other actors had gone home, Pacino continued to work, filming interviews with the cast that ranged from construction workers through to truck drivers and on to his own peers, James Earl Jones, Rosemary Harris, Kevin Kline, and Derek Jacobi. By juxtaposing the day-to-day life of ordinary people with the actors and their characters in the play, we attempted to create a kind of cosmic mosaic showing Shakespeare in a way never seen before. For some time, the press would refer to Pacino's project as nothing more than an extravagant home movie. But 2 years later, in October 1995, Fox Searchlight, the specialty division of 20th Century Fox, acquired the worldwide rights to Looking for Richard in a deal estimated to be worth about $3 million.
Oh my God.
Following its premiere screening at both the Sundance Film Festival and its international debut at Cannes, the movie was finally scheduled for a late spring 1996 release in America and in Britain in early 1997, only weeks before The Crucible. Pacino has made an informative, engrossing, and hugely enjoyable movie that stands as a work of pure entertainment, wrote Empire magazine. And one of Britain's most respected film critics, Barry Norman, said much of the same in his recommendation for the movie, observing that Winona Ryder made a gorgeous Lady Anne.
What is going on?
That's all I got. That's the whole page.
What is happening?
But, like, what is going on? What universe am I living in?
Folks, if you didn't gather from me just reading that page, this movie is a semi-documentary, semi-adaptation of Richard III.
Semi-film school thesis film.
Yeah. Like the structure of this movie is that it'll be a scene from Richard III where Al Pacino's, like, hobbling around as Richard, going up to Alec Baldwin and just being like, "Hey, Clarence, you know, we got to deal with this thing that's going on. You know, the king's dying." And then it will cut back to, like, a small room in Brooklyn where Al Pacino's sitting with this guy named Fred, who's a Shakespeare scholar. And then, like, Kevin Spacey's just lurking in the background. And there's some other people in the room who I don't know. And this guy, Fred, just yelling at Al Pacino, like, "You don't understand Shakespeare, mate."
Yeah, like, the movie begins with, like, and I don't know that much into, like, Looking for Richard. I try to go in as blind as you want me to, Jeff. And the first thing I'm seeing, it's like, is this just like a big sales pitch for Richard III? Like, is he he's hustling
at the beginning?
He's like going around shaking people. It's like, "What do you know about Richard III?" And they're like, "I don't know. My horse.
You know when you're on, like, the streets and there's, like, the Greenpeace advocates who are going around talking to people?
I was going to say.
And like, they're doing good work for like a good cause. Imagine, but like sometimes you are just trying to get somewhere.
Yeah.
That, but with Al Pacino talking about Shakespeare is the vibe of the opening.
I was going to say, it's like Harrison Ford running to the street. It's like, there's a man in my house. Yeah. What a man. It's like, where's my wife? Slap someone in the face. Where's my wife?
You're seeing some people who are like literally at work in like a construction yard. And he's just like, so what do you know about Shakespeare?
What do you know about Shakespeare? Tell me what you know.
And this like fucking like dude from the Bronx is just like, I don't know. I read him in high school or something. I don't know. Wackadoo.
Literally, this is the first like few minutes of the movie. But then it cuts to these like recreated, like made for TV, if not worse than TV looking ass. Mm. Like they have costumes. They have lighting. Like it's a production.
Yeah.
Of them recreating like Richard III on camera cinematically. But and then it cuts to like the rehearsal room of them having conversations. And then it cuts to like fucking Al Pacino and Fred's the guy's name.
Yeah, Fred's my guy. Fred is my like.
Like it's those three bits. It's like the dramatic reenactments. Yeah. It's the rehearsal scenes. And then it's Al Pacino and Fred going from place to place talking about Shakespeare and like the shit he did. And it's just, it's those three bits, the entire movie. And like, it didn't quite happen, but I would have loved it if like Al Pacino slowly lost his mind.
It's just like he's losing his shit at the end. It's like Werner Herzog in the documentary. It's like, there is no peace in the jungle. All I hear is the screams of fornication.
Literally, if he was just like, if it's like, I am the Richard III, it's like, no, Al, we're just making a movie. It's like, you don't understand. Shakespeare didn't believe in movies. He believed in real life.
He was a real guy.
He was a real guy. He believed in real things. I am Richard III. My horse. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he just goes crazy about it.
The thing about this movie is this is like one of my favorite subgenres of movie. Which is like
the passion project,
insane
genre?
Passion project from actor.
Yeah,
I like when an actor just like is like, I'm gonna shoot my shot and make my movie.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about. I texted you during this movie, and I was like, what movie have we covered that's close to this? And I think we said like Welcome to Hollywood, but at least
Welcome the closest. Example.
Welcome to Hollywood had a point though.
Yes,
you know what I mean. This didn't have a point so much to it other than it was just Al Pacino be like, I fucking love Shakespeare and I'm gonna make them how much I love Shakespeare and it's gonna be in this movie. And you know who I'd love to talk about this movie with?
Who?
Cole Bradley.
I'd love to get him riled up.
I would love to get Cole Bradley riled up about this movie. I bet he had some fucking thoughts if he watched this.
The thing that's funny to me is like, this is basically right after Pacino finally wins the Oscar after like 8 nominations. And he wins for Scent of a Woman.
Oh.
And it's also like shortly after he does Heat and, you know, he and De Niro are like the top upper esh of Hollywood royalty at this time.
Yeah.
And they both go off and direct movies.
Mm-hmm.
And De Niro makes A Bronx Tale, like a beloved drama about a kid growing up in the Bronx.
Yeah.
And then Pacino's like, I'm going to fucking just talk about Shakespeare. Let's figure it out.
I'm just going to talk about Shakespeare.
We're gonna point out how Richard III is somehow within us all.
I'm just thinking, like, the audience last week listened to Boys.
Yes.
And now they're with us on Looking for Richard. We've talked about the movie.
Yeah.
By the way, folks, we're done talking about the movie. That's right?
We have some key details we have to talk about.
Okay. But like we essentially covered it.
Yeah, we've covered what the point, what this movie is.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to just go from scene to scene and just be like, so in this part, Pacino and Fred, they're talking about like Clarence and like how he kind of fits into the whole fat tapestry of this thing.
Yeah.
But then it cuts to, you know, a scene of the king dying. Like we can't really do that.
Right. My favorite bit was when they went to like Shakespeare's birthplace. Like, I thought the bed would be bigger.
Yeah, Pacino. Well, I like that part because Pacino seems genuinely like
let down.
Yeah, let down that Shakespeare is not this like massive figure that he is envisioned.
Yeah, he's like, oh,
he's just a guy.
He's just a carpenter like Jesus.
Because he's got a great ass. And your head is going all the way up it.
Yeah. We are also recording this episode shortly after the Oscar ceremony this year. Did you watch Pacino announce Best Picture?
No.
He like comes out. He comes out just like looks fucking sauced. Like he just walks out on the stage. He's like,
They have asked me to read the best picture. The best picture, yeah.
And then he just opens the aisle and he's like, my eyes see Oppenheimer. And like, he doesn't read any of the nominees off.
No.
There's no music playing because they aren't ready for him to just say it.
No. So he's
like, my eyes see Oppenheimer.
And then it's just... He's like playing the music and it comes to Chris Nolan like getting up in a shock and like running up to the stage.
He didn't read the nominees.
He didn't read the nominees. He's just like, all right, I guess I'm gonna do it.
Why I see Oppenheimer?
The man's fucking old. Why are you casting him as the best picture reader?
They usually do try and get like some old legend to come out and do it.
Fucking backfires every time. Lest we forget 2016. Yeah. It's always just like
La La Land. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Moonlight.
It's actually guys, Moonlight. There's been a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture. This is not a joke. I'm not joking. You guys won Best Picture. Oh man.
I see Oppenheimer.
You know who survived that calamity?
Who?
Fucking Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
And they brought him back.
They keep bringing it back. Well, they tried Chris Rock once and it's like, nope, can't do that anymore.
You know who should everybody agrees on this, but John Mulaney should host the Oscars. He presented one award and it was the best moment of the night.
Oh yeah.
Because he came out and instead of actually talking about anything, he just recited the plot of Field of Dreams to make a point about how it doesn't make sense. And then I was like, all right, here are the nominees. It was great.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
So looking for Richard. Mm-hmm. This movie shot over 4 years. That's why Pacino keeps changing his look in the movie.
Right, because he's like growing his beard in for like the other movie he's going to do.
He's coming off of Heat, and then he has his beard from Carlito's Way at one point.
Yeah.
He's like constantly changing his look. So you can really tell like this is like, he keeps coming back to
this. He's getting fucking thinner and thinner and thinner till he looks like the Richard III
Hunchback.
Yeah,
he's like deranged. But like this is clearly something where it's like, another like, you know, passion project guy would have like, you know, started working this and then he just gets too busy. He's like, I don't know, I'm not gonna finish it.
But he fucking comes back.
He keeps coming back to it.
He has that group chat pinned.
Yeah. It's like he takes like a year off to go make Carlito's Way, and then he's like texting Fred, you up?
you ready to do some more Richard?
Ready to talk Richard? Ready to talk Dick?
The third Dick. Oh my God. Have you even ever seen like a play adaptation of Richard III?
No. Okay. So
have you seen a play adaptation of any Shakespeare?
Not on stage. I've seen movies of Shakespeare.
Which ones?
I've seen two Macbeths.
Okay. Yeah. I saw Patrick Stewart Macbeth.
I've seen Ian McKellen Macbeth.
I'm not seeing the Ian McKellen Macbeth.
Which is a cool production because it's basically like, it's just the actors in a black void doing it. It's cool.
That's cool.
And then I saw The Tragedy of Macbeth, the Joel Cohen Macbeth, which is really good.
You haven't seen the Patrick Stewart?
I've not seen the Patrick Stewart.
That one's actually pretty good.
And then like I've obviously seen like 2 million adaptations of Romeo and Juliet.
Well, I don't even know why. Like that's almost not even an adaptation anymore because like it's just so fucking.
But I am overall kind of a neophyte about Shakespeare. Like I'm not that like into the Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And I wish I was. I just haven't, you know,
do you think he's a fraud?
No, I don't think he's a fraud.
No. I don't have an opinion, so I'm just asking.
You mean like was it multiple people?
Right. Yeah.
I think that he's kind of gotten past the scrutiny of that at this point, as in like
well, he's dead.
No,
Jeff.
As in like whether he was real or whether it was him and a bunch of people, or if it was just a bunch of people writing under that name. Whatever the confluence was, I kind of think after like 500 years, we just gotta kind of be like, we'll just call it fucking Shakespeare and just ride it off.
Right.
It's kind of like we gotta print the legend at this point.
Sure. Okay.
Like the plays are good. They changed modern society. I think we just gotta go with it at this point.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I have no opinions on it. It's just, like funny to get people riled up about it.
Like I don't really have that intense of an opinion. Like.
But you know the people who do.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're funny.
Yeah, and they're funny. Like, and if you want to have like a deep opinion about it, I'm not going to disparage you. But I'm just kind of like, I don't have time to. I cannot put mental energy.
Couldn't be bothered
into being bothered about Shakespeare's potential like multiplicities.
Right. I'm almost at the point where we should just keep recording until Brian knocks on the door.
I think that's exactly what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, like, okay, some more fun facts about
the
this.
Only thing I want to talk about next is, like, Kevin's the three things. It's Kevin Spacey in this movie. It's Lady Anne.
Yeah, we actually have to talk about Winona Ryder in this movie.
And then
movie.
It's the fucking battle sequence that we just have to address.
Yes, we
those
do.
Three things I have to talk about, and then I'm fine.
Because, but, so, to your first point, that maybe the wildest thing about this movie is that all the famous, like, actors who are in it, like, mm-hmm. when you have James Earl Jones or Kenneth Branagh or something, like, they're just there for interviews.
Yeah.
Claire Pacino's just like, hey, can I get you for an hour? And, like, he interviews them.
Yeah.
Great. And then you got Alec Baldwin, Winona Ryder, who only really appear during, like, rehearsals specific to their scenes and then in the scenes in Richard III that they're in.
Yeah, the production that they're doing.
They're kind of like a limited presence in this movie.
Yeah, they're like, the $40 a day with unlimited donuts kind of folks.
Like, you only see Alec and Winona for, like, sections of this movie.
Yeah, because they're busy, you know? They have lives.
Kevin Spacey.
Okay, but his first entrance in this movie is, like, it's almost akin to, everyone's probably experienced this before in their life, where, like, you're watching a documentary or a movie or a TV show, and there's a character in the background who's, like, you're not quite sure. Like, you don't get a full look at his face, but you think, it's like, that fucking Morgan Freeman?
Yeah.
It's like, what? I can't. And then, like, 3 hours pass, and then it reappears again, but it's still, it's only half face.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's fucking Morgan Freeman. And then, like, 3 more hours pass, and it's like, that is fucking Morgan Freeman. He's been in this movie the whole time.
Yeah.
That is like Kevin Spacey in this, where it's like, you see him first in the background of a rehearsal scene, just sitting down, chillax, not the main focus at all. He's just, like, right next to Al Pacino, and you're like, that fucking Kevin Spacey right there?
Yes.
And then, like, it cuts to, like, a stage production, and it's like, It's Al Pacino's fucking Richard the Third. It's Alec Baldwin's Prince.
I want everyone to know that anytime Stewart mentions Richard the Third, he's doing, like, a deformed body.
Well, because, like,
thing.
I will say the one thing that I appreciated was how, like, explanatory.
This was about Richard.
This was because I had nothing. I don't know anything about Richard the Third other than, like, Galaxy Quest.
By Grabthar's Hammer.
By Grabthar's Hammer. The act, fuck.
Alan Rickman.
Where, like, one of the first scenes, Alan Rickman's in the makeup. He's, like, you know, loom and gloom, looking in the mirror at a convention or whatever. And he's like, how did it come to this? I used to play Richard the Third. Like, that was my only knowledge of Richard the Third, was that line in Galaxy Quest.
Can I sidebar about Galaxy Quest real quick?
Let's sidebar Galaxy Quest.
Because I have
fucking great movie.
No, great movie. I have something really quick to say. Tim Allen in that movie.
Best role.
Tim Allen. Has given 2 actually good performances.
One of them is Toy Story?
I think one of them is Toy Story.
Yep.
And I think one of them is Galaxy Quest.
Absolutely.
What do they have in common?
Oh, he's the guy who's in charge who's not really in charge.
He's playing William Shatner in both of them.
No. Oh, wait a minute. But
Buzz Lightyear is based on...
He is Buzz... For some reason, I thought Tim Allen, he's Woody, and that's not, it's Tom Hanks. No. You're right.
In both of them, he's weird that the 2 times
he's played William Shatner.
And, like, he's been funny in other movies. And I'm not going to say, like, he's necessarily bad in them.
Like, he's not great in Santa Claus, but you love Santa Claus.
Yeah, but I think the 2, like, actually good performances that he's given, he's weirdly playing William Shatner in both of them.
But Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
Alan Rickman.
Great.
So fucking great.
Watched Die Hard a few weeks ago. First
Sigourney
movie.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver
in that movie is so good. She's just repeat what the computer says. And it's like, computer, what's wrong with the system? And nothing responds. And then Sigourney Weaver's like, computer, what's wrong with the system? The systems are critical. And she says, the systems are critical. You don't have to do that every time. It's like, well, it's the only job I have on the show other than make my boobs look big. Oh my God, Sigourney Weaver in that movie.
She's incredible. You know, it'd be a good subject for the show one day, Sigourney Weaver.
Would be.
I thought
about
it.
Would be.
Anyway.
Do you ever watch Vantage Point with Dennis Quaid?
No.
About the whole president assassination attempt that goes back.
Sounds good.
Sigourney Weaver plays like a news TV operator, like the control room where they like cut to camera A, cut to camera B. Like, she's like that kind of role, and she like sees the assassination or whatever. Vantage Point. Look it up. It's actually kind of a decent movie. Dennis Quaid is in it. He's a Secret Service guy. It's
D. Quaid.
General Ross, guy who died recently.
William Hurt.
He plays the president.
This I see.
Yeah. Pretty good movie.
Okay, so there they're talking about Richard III. Kevin Spacey's just in the background.
Kevin Spacey's just in the background. And like, you're thinking like, because I texted you and I was like, okay, I saw Alec Baldwin's big scene. I saw Winona Ryder's big scene. When is Kevin Spacey's big scene in this movie? And like, I guess I misspoke because I said it's like, it never really happens, but that's not totally true. He does kind of have a big scene-ish.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. It's just like he's in the background lurking in this movie. And when I say lurking, Jeff, like how accurate would you say lurking is?
So the thing about Kevin Spacey in the movie is his presence I can best describe to like when those Epstein photos come out and it's just like you see like someone in deep in the background and then you like keep looking at the picture like this same guy's on in every one of these flight pictures. Except instead of like accusations of child pornography and whatnot, which Kevin Spacey has plenty of.
I was gonna say, like he did fill that box.
Oddly not connected to that in this way. He's in almost like every scene of this movie.
Yeah.
It's clear like Kevin Spacey and
was involved.
And I don't think he has like a line of dialogue. I don't think he says anything for like an hour and a half.
No.
He's just in the background of all these rehearsals, of all these meetings. Yeah. There are scenes where it's like Al Pacino just yelling at Fred. And Kevin Spacey's just like nodding his head in the background. And it's just bizarre.
it's
like,
weird.
He's like the one, like, I know that, you know, removed from his accusations and likely misdeeds, he is like a real actor. He's like very committed to the craft.
Yeah.
So it does weirdly seem like Kevin Spacey is just like.
He's just on board.
Yeah, he's just like. This is great. We're going to talk about Shakespeare. We're going to educate the masses. I'll be with you the whole way, buddy.
Yeah. It's clear that he was like a benefactor of this documentary.
And then knowing what we know now, it's just very like unsettling to just have Kevin Spacey just lurking in the background of every scene.
It was very weird because I was like, who's he hunting for?
Yes.
He's got that like hunting face.
Oh, speaking of hunting, I want to talk about the opening shot of this movie. Because it's like, or the opening scene. It's Al Pacino playing basketball. And then he's like, then he has like a vision and he's just backstage at a play. And there's no one else there.
Yeah.
He's like running around through a black void and he runs out onto the stage and he whips around. And he looks in the crowd and who's sitting in the crowd? William Shakespeare staring at him. And then the title comes up Looking for Richard.
Looking for Richard, the title.
I'm like looking for Bill Shakespeare, but found him.
Looking for Richard, the title. What were your thoughts? Looking for Richard.
I think we found him.
It's like, it's weird because like looking for Richard could mean anything, right?
Yes.
That's why you said, do not look up what looking for Richard is because you'll never guess what it's about.
Yeah.
And you were right. I was surprised. I did not know he was looking for Richard III from William Shakespeare's play.
Yes.
Like I was thinking like looking for Richard. Is it like a man named Richard who's looking for his inner self?
Yeah.
Is it like a person who's looking for an actual person named Richard?
Yeah.
Is it a person who somebody close to them named Richard died and they're looking for the last remnants? I was like, what's looking for Richard? I'm like, Al Pacino wants to educate the masses on Richard III?
Yes.
What?
I'm going to read some notes I took during this movie that will get us up to Winona.
Okay.
I wrote, Al assailing random people on the street about the value of Shakespeare. I wrote, question fades into quest.
Yeah.
Which the thing that happens is like the title card comes up for a sequence and it's called The Question. And then the I-O-N disappears. The quest to educate the masses. Pacino saying, it has always been a dream of mine to share what Shakespeare means to me. They rehearse in a medieval museum to better get to the time period.
Yes.
I then wrote, this movie is incredible. Pacino wearing backwards scent of a woman hat. He's wearing a scent of the woman crew hat backwards.
I think I texted that to you. It's like he is reciting Shakespeare with like sunglasses and a backwards hat. And he could not be more committed to it.
Americans are made to feel inhibited by Shakespeare. Al is driven to prove that Americans can do Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And then Richard gets Clarence locked up so he can move in on the kids.
Okay, but that is true, though.
Do you remember the point where they get kicked out of a restaurant? This happens right before Winona comes
in. Like, you don't have permits here. And they're like, whoa, we're just fucking filming here.
Yeah. My Pacino and my boy Fred. We're gonna talk about Fred in a little bit. Go to this like restaurant, this coffee shop.
Pour one out for Fred.
Yeah, as like a normal New York thing to do is to go to a coffee shop and like talk about Shakespeare. That seems like actually a thing that people would do in like Greenwich Village. Like,
yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah.
But they also brought a camera,
and
like,
what
all these dudes. This like guy comes out and he's like, Al Pacino, you have to leave my coffee shop. You do not have a permit to be here.
Oh, my God.
What do you mean we don't have a permit? What do you mean the permit? All right, fine. Whatever.
We'll go film somewhere else.
Leave.
I love how his, like, cut for the camera. Yeah. He does, like, the kill, yeah. like, finger across the neck yes. thing. He does that, like, very sporadically throughout. It's like,
got it.
Oh, and one of the early things is like, so who's going to yell action? Am I going to yell action? Are you going to yell yeah. action? Okay.
Who's yelling it?
All right, let's go.
I see.
We're recording.
Oppenheimer.
Are we at Winona?
Yes, we are at Winona because they're having a lot of difficulty figuring yes. out who they're going to cast as Lady Anne.
This is a big chapter of the movie where they're like, who plays Lady Anne? It's like, well, I want to cast someone young, like really fucking young, like yeah. a little girl young, like, you know, because I got to get with this girl, right? Mm. So she's got to be really little, yeah. like a really little girl. And it's like, yeah, but
like, yeah. like, I get what you're going for, Al. you want Richard to be creepy, but let's not segue ourselves into that territory.
It's like, I get what you're trying to go for here, but like, also, they need to memorize Shakespeare lines, Richard. Yeah. And that's when they're like, well, I guess there's going to be some actress out there. And then it cuts to the rehearsal scene and the camera pans over.
Well, because it's like, he kind of...
That's the reveal, right?
No, the reveal is like, he's like, we're going to cast someone. Who could it be? And he's like looking up. And then it's like, his eyes open up.
He sees something, like, but we don't see what he sees.
And it's like he's seeing a vision and there's just a whip pan to Winona Ryder.
To Winona Ryder in the rehearsal
yeah.
room. Yes.
In the rehearsal room. In talking with him about it. And you're just like, oh,
shit. Yeah, I literally fell out of my chair and then, when I saw it.
And then, like, a title card comes up, Lady Anne. There's, like, a lot of buildup to Winona's appearance in this movie.
Yeah. And so then we get Lady Anne stuff. Yeah. We get, like, the dramatic recreation scene, which the story with Lady Anne, it's like Richard III killed Lady Anne's husband because they were a part of the opposing faction yes. in the War of Roses, the civil war between the two English families yes. going for the crown of England, which then proceeds into the French War, where the French invade with the other lot of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, a lot of things.
A lot of things, right? But that so then the scene with Winona and Al Pacino, it's like, I killed your husband, but like, I did it because I loved you.
Because I wanted you.
Because I really love you. Will you, you know, be with me? And she's like, you're a sickly man, but I really love you. Okay. Like, that's how the scene goes.
Because, like, that they're talking, and I want to say Winona is, like, we've talked about in an earlier episode, she grew up reading Shakespeare, and she's, like, kind of a very classical actor.
Yeah.
Actress, in that sense. Like, she goes back to the classics a lot. She has a large book collection. And she does acquit herself, I think, very well in these sequences, where it's just, like, her playing Lady Anne.
She goes, like, I'll say this, like, and not in a bad way, she goes, like, unnoticed.
Yeah. Like she's
people who go noticed in this movie is not for a good reason. Yes.
Like she kind of just does the scene and she's good at
yeah,
it.
And
you're
yeah.
just like, yeah, great. Okay, she worked cool. for 2 weeks on this movie. So it's not like, you know,
$40 a day and all the donuts you could eat.
Yeah. It seems like she's just kind of happy to, like, yeah, I'll play Shakespeare. It's fun.
Yeah.
I finally get to work with Al Pacino.
You get to put on another big fucking corset.
Yeah.
For the 90th time in my career.
I've been sucked back in time yet again. Just like a time traveler who cannot escape to the
what
present.
What will I do after this movie? The Crucible.
But I like that immediately after her first scene as Lady Anne is when we get my favorite part of this movie.
Which is?
We cut back to the rehearsal space, and Pacino is just sitting there with Winona Ryder on a couch. And my guy Fred is across.
Oh, yes.
And he is pissed because Pacino has hired another Shakespeare scholar to explain Shakespeare to him. And Fred is just like, you can't fucking understand. He's like lighting Al Pacino up. He's like, you cannot possibly understand Shakespeare. It's not a scholarly thing. You have to feel it. You feel it, man. You must feel it. You have become too penitent. Just like screaming
just
at Al Pacino.
Losing his shit.
Yeah, he's literally losing his shit at Al Pacino.
And all the
who
cast.
Is shockingly not getting angry back at him.
No, the Kim and the cast are all kind of just like laughing
they're
at
just
him.
Sitting there. And Fred is like, there's veins bulging out of his head. As he's just like, You hire a scholar? Shakespeare's not scholarly. Shakespeare's raw. He's emotion.
And I'm just like, all right, Fred, too many donuts, I guess.
Basically the vibe he's got.
He says, he's just like, Fred, please, you're starting to become an actor.
Fred, you're scaring the, you're scaring the actors.
Scaring the actors,
Kevin Spacey's just like in the back, like a gremlin. Yeah, I wrote Winona just sitting through this in my notes because she's just sitting through it.
It's her first day.
I'd love to ask her about that experience nowadays.
I would too. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then there's other shit with like, then he explains like the whole like Halbert III takes the crown with like killing Alec Baldwin, Clarence, and then having the kids killed.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the king. And,
Well, Stuart, this is when we get to your favorite part of this movie.
Are we at the battle?
No, we're at it's the, because like Pacino's kind of explaining how he gets the how Richard kind of evokes sympathy from the kingdom to be appointed as king, and at one point he is told like you've become too penitent, like he feels too bad, and it just immediate cuts away to Al Pacino staring at the camera going ha. And then it just like cuts back. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's like he just screams at the camera.
It's like a Family Guy cutaway gag almost, where it's just like a scene and then we're right back into the scene. Like, whoa.
What was that? Oh, yeah. I forgot what moment that was, but yeah, that happened.
And then Fred gets, I'm almost at the end of my notes, but Fred gets mad at him again.
Yes.
He asks, how much more are we going to shoot? It's becoming a movie about a play. We're supposed to be making a documentary about making Shakespeare more accessible to people. He's like, Al, you have to stop.
And this then movie, Al just like,
this movie is supposed to be about Shakespeare accessibility.
Remind me about
and it's mostly just talking about you trying to make this specific production.
Remind me about the film roll line at the final battle scene, because it's really funny. But then we get that one scene with
Fred needs to get his shit together.
We get that one scene with Kevin Spacey and Richard III where he's like, I want you to go kill the boys. And Kevin Spacey's like, all right, sir, I don't know if I want to do that. And he's like, yes, you do. And you're like, all right, cool, I do. And he did. And he killed the kids. And then the next bit that I remember is like the other family that like lost the Civil War rallied an army in France and is invading.
Yes. And they rallied an army.
Rallied an army. Yes. We're going to get to that. And so like we cut to like, he has this like, was that the penitent thing where he's dreaming in the war tent or whatever?
I can't remember.
He's like, he's like sleeping in his like tent on the verge of battle. This is all recreating, reimagining shit. And that's where like he wakes up. It's like, oh, like, yeah. But then the battle scene starts. And we're, first off, like we're just in this open field.
Yes.
Right.
And, just a field. It's like clearly just like an hour north of Manhattan.
And like, I know like they had to have some money because they have some background with armor and swords.
Yeah.
But like, it's hard to tell because there's like one wide shot where it shows like 50 guys.
Yes.
But then when it gets close, it looks like there's five of them that just keep going in and out of the camera's frame.
Yes.
It's like kind of funny. But then his army gets destroyed and then he like is running away. And that's where he says the line like, my horse, my kingdom from a horse. Cutting away to Al Pacino and be like, you see how selfish of a guy this is. How, you know, after all he's been through and now he's willing to give up his kingdom for a horse. I'm just like, great. Yeah. That's amazing. It's so cool.
You know what I was really hoping was going to happen?
What?
It's like this whole movie's clearly kind of shot for like a shoestring budget.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was really hoping it would get to the battle to cut to this like wide shot of thousands of CGI. Like, that seems like the crazy shit a director would do.
He would raise so much money for the final battle scene.
But no, it's like 20 guys, maybe.
It is like 20. There's like one shot where it could be 50, and then the rest of the close-ups are like five guys.
Yes.
When he gets like surrounded by guys, he gets surrounded by five guys who all shoot him, light him up Boromir style with arrows.
Yeah,
and then, and that's when he dies. And then like, and cut! And then there's one camera guy on the hill somewhere, and he's like, you think I should tell him we have like 10 more rolls of film to shoot? And he's like, no. And they put that in the fucking movie, which I love. I love that. Because they were clearly like, we have no more. Like, there's like a trivia bit where they said like they loaned him a crew for like a Saturday or whatever.
Well, yeah. So this movie's filmed, or the battle scene's filmed during the production of Heat. On like
that's
a weekend.
What it was.
And it's Michael Mann is just like Al Pacino the whole time they're filming Heat. One of the, like, the best movies ever. And Al Pacino the whole time, whenever they're like, God, he must be like, right, so I'm working on this thing called Looking for Richard. So we're talking about Richard. And they're like, Al, we're making Heat. You got to relax.
And they're like, fine, and we will devote
and he's
a
like,
set.
I'm just really strong. I can't get enough of the, I can't then have a crew film this action, the battle scene.
And Michael Mann is like, take my fucking guys and go shoot your battle scene.
Oh, my God.
And so like Michael Mann just gives him his crew from Heat. He just goes
out. For a day. Who are clearly just done.
Goes out, shoots the battle scene from Looking for Richard.
Where do you think they shot it?
If they're filming as Heat, it must be somewhere near L.A.
Yeah. I mean, like, some fucking open green pasture.
Yeah, some like open green pasture near L.A. A thing that typically doesn't exist. But I'm sure there's
in California.
I'm sure there's somewhere near L.A. where they've, you know, changed the ecology. So they can do shit like this.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Richard dies, and Al hits us with ironies, just hypocrisy with flair.
Yep. He hits us with that. And I'm trying to think, but, like, I don't know anything else that happens in this movie because my brain shut off at that point.
Well, that's the end. Is Richard dies, and Al Pacino just, like, has a little soliloquy, and that's the end.
Yeah, that's Looking for Richard.
That's Looking for Richard.
I haven't found him yet.
I didn't find him.
I did not find
him. Oh, Richard. Kevin Spacey does actually have a scene at the end.
I think I briefly mentioned that. It's where like he asked him
Lord
to kill
Buckingham.
Yeah, it's where he asked Lord Buckingham to kill the kids.
Yeah.
And Kevin Spacey, for the first time in his life, has reservations about doing bad things to children.
Yes.
And sorry, I have to.
That was pretty good.
That was pretty good. I have to give myself that one.
I did write in my notes, bro, I'm desperate for Kevin Spacey to say something. Because he was
always in the background.
He didn't say something for like an hour and a half.
Right. He was just a 2-hour movie. He finally had like a scene which somewhat justified his role in the movie.
Folks, this is a 2-hour movie.
It is.
The thing is, Lord Buckingham's not that beefy of a role.
It's not.
He really doesn't do much.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then Al doesn't know. I'm checking my notes to see if there's anything
I'm done talking about this movie. Let's just.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about like the post-production process of this movie.
Okay.
Because eventually, you know.
Is Brian close?
He finishes shooting this movie. And apparently Pacino has about 80 hours of footage.
Oh my God.
Just shot over like a 5-year period of time. And he hands it over to the editors, and it's just like, all right, we're going to make a movie out of this. Like, oh my fucking God. Because normally, you know, you film movies like normally, like I think it's like an 8-to-2 scale or something, like, or like a 4-to-1 scale. Like, you shoot 4 minutes for every 1 minute you use.
Okay. So
I can't remember the exact.
Like,
you shoot 4 hours of footage for like a 1-hour movie, essentially. Like,
okay.
Just with like various takes and
sure.
Okay. Like, you know, scenes are going to cut.
80 hours.
You get 80 hours for a 2-hour movie. That's 40 hours for every 1 hour.
He out here trying to make like the next like Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah. So it's just like,
but Richard III.
Dumping 80 hours on the editors of film.
Their lives are
not
ruined.
Not files, literal film.
Their lives are ruined.
And it's just like, yeah, it will take you over 3.5 days to just look through all this. With no break.
With no break.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Those poor editors. Well, that means they probably did it, like, for 5 days. For reasonable hours.
Just like, just
I would
not.
Hope. Unless if Al Pacino held a gun to their head and made them watch.
Keep going. Keep the reels going. I have to pee. I need to call my wife. I need to tell her where I am.
I also like this trivia fact. A lot of the scenes where the actors look frustrated and bewildered were real due to the fact that no one knew what kind of direction Pacino was aiming for.
I mean, like, there
it's like not a fun fact. It's just a part of the movie.
There was a whole bit in the film where they're like talking about what roles are going to play. And they're like, no, you're going to play Clarence. No, you'll play Buckingham and you'll play Lady Anne. Like, Man, what is just a maniac production. just insanity.
Just Pacino working for years at this thing.
Yeah. Crazy.
I'm kind of obsessed with it. I think it's kind of crazy.
Well, we own it now.
We do own it.
How much do you think this movie made?
I can tell you how much this movie made. Looking for...
Deeply curious.
It made $1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
Yes.
Off of a $55 billion budget. Yeah.
This movie had an Avatar The Way of Water-esque budget.
He like bankrupted his estate to make this movie.
Yeah, but Gina goes
he's
broke.
Still recovering.
That's why he's making like Godfather 4 after. No.
Yeah.
Let me see what he made immediately after this. We're going to figure out what Al Pacino is making to recoup his money from Looking for Richard.
Nothing. He just doesn't ever recuperate.
Yada, yada, yada.
Like, this isn't like a turning point in his career, obviously, right?
No, this is like, oh, he's like Heat the same time. He does Donnie Brasco, The Devil's Advocate. He's doing fine after this. Okay. I mean, he's doing fine this whole period. It is a funny point in his career, though, that like this is his passion project. Like, Al Pacino has had a storied career, one of the most successful in Hollywood, one of the most beloved screen presences of all time. And it's funny that this is the passion project.
This is the passion project.
And I'm so happy that Winona is a part of it, that we got to talk about it.
That was so weird. Like, what did he have to do?
Like, it's just cool that she has this in her filmography forever.
And he's going to pop up again with Winona Ryder, too.
Yeah,
isn't
I think we have another Pacino coming up, right? I'm not 100% on that. Could be wrong.
No, we do. It's Simone.
Oh, Simone.
Yeah, he comes back in Simone.
Oh, yeah, I'm in Simone. He's
Victor Taransky.
Good for him. We're going to talk about it.
We are going to talk about it. I don't even want to read the description to the audience because like that's going to be
another wild one.
It's another wild one that like the whole joke of the movie is going to be what it's about in modern takes.
Yes. It's a movie that will be kind of funny to talk about nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's all I got about Looking for Richard. Stuart, you got anything else to add?
I need to make food.
Yeah. It's cool that Winona was in this. I'm happy that we got to talk about it. I never even mentioned thank you for listening to our episode about boys last week.
I don't want to thank you for listening to it. I want to apologize that you listened to it. If you listen to it, I'm sorry. Yeah.
But like we said, this is like she films this over 2 weeks in between Boys and The Crucible. She goes right into The Crucible after this movie comes out, or right after this movie is shot.
Yeah.
Which we'll be talking about next week, joined by a very exciting guest, Brian DeLisi, coming back for his third appearance, fourth if you count Gotti. On the show, but we're talking about The Crucible next week.
The Crucible.
Yes. My kingdom for a horse, my kingdom for my name. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. As a reminder, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, pop it to our Reddit, r/Trollting, at Trollting Pod, Twitter, or Instagram, trolltingpodcast@gmail.com. Pop into, I already said the Reddit, at Jeff W. Sweeney for me on Twitter. Thanks, as always, to Rebecca for our graphic design and Michael Van Buttigam Smith for the theme music that's now taking you out. Have a great week, folks.
Bye.
My name!